Welcome to another episode of the MMA Lockcast. I'm your host, Manpreet, aka MMA Lock of the Night, your boy on social media at MMALOTN, and the architect behind the MMA Fight Archive, ensuring you leave no stone unturned when you're researching all of these upcoming MMA events. We got a plethora of events this weekend alone between the UFC, Bellator, Road to UFC, LFA, ACA, A1 Combat as well. I believe UAE Warriors has a doubleheader for you guys, and we'll have direct links for past fights for all the competitors competing on those cards, and not to mention pretty much the entire schedule for 2024 through the UFC and 16 other different promotions. It will obviously be very helpful when the Contender Series kicks off later this summer. All right, just a quick heads up. There was a death in the family on the wife's side over the weekend. She flew out immediately. I'll be flying out in the matter of, you know, a few hours here. So there was a lot of tough situations in terms of trying to get the work done for the week. Obviously, you'll see in this podcast that there aren't the usual bells and whistles that you guys are used to. I still want to get the researching done out as thoroughly as I normally do, but this will be an abbreviated version of the MMA Lockcast where I go over every fight, not as in depth as I normally do. I just want to get to the point as quick as possible because, again, I got to be out of the house in just about an hour to an hour and a half. So got to record this quickly, put it through the processing program, and then throw it up on YouTube. So I want to get through that ASAP. In terms of Bellator, my goal is to get it out for Thursday. I'm going to try, it's going to be tough to do work while I'm out there. But if I can find the time to squeeze it in, I'll do my best to get Bellator out there for you guys as well. I won't be covering LFA or ACA on the Patreon page as I normally do this week for the reasons that I've laid out, and I'll do my best in terms of trying to get some Road to UFC content out, as I'll be back on Friday. I know the first event is on Saturday morning, and then the second day is on Sunday morning, so I'll do the second day, no problem. I should be able to get that workout for you guys. Saturday morning is a bit of a question mark at this point in time, so I appreciate the understanding ahead of time here. There won't be any other segments dropping throughout the week, other than hopefully, fingers crossed, like I said, Bellator by Thursday, and then on Saturday afternoon, I will drop my three best prop bets as well as my Lockie two-step / Lockie Trinity parlay. I'll be dropping that parlay on the Patreon later this evening. So if you're already on there, don't worry about that. Otherwise, if you're going to wait and wait for me to drop it on Friday, on Saturday, you'll have to wait until that point as well. So no recap or anything this week. Let's just get right into it. Again, going to get through this as quickly as possible so that I don't. I have enough time to upload this for you guys and still get you guys my picks. Appreciate all the love, appreciate all the support, and I appreciate the understanding as well. All right, let's get right into the breakdowns. First fight of the night, Vanessa Demopoulos, plus 280, going up against Emily Ducati, minus 340. Demopoulos got a little bit of a gift of a decision in her last matchup against Kanako Murata. In my opinion, she was very surprised when the decision was read and she actually won that fight. She tried justifying it by saying that, she cut her up off of her back, but the cut that actually occurred on Murata came from a inadvertent headbutt during a wrestling or a takedown attempt. So, she was active off her back. I'll give her that. She did enough to clearly sway the judges in the first two rounds of that matchup. But I thought Murata deserved to win the second and third round, as she did manage to accrue good top time, but also land some good ground and pound. Maybe not as voluminous as what Demopoulos was doing off her back, but you have to put the top control and the damage that Murata was landing. Regardless, Demopoulos, clearly very active off of her back. Striking game, she likes to throw some kicks. She's not the most technical with her punches, and I think that's where she's going to end up coming up short here against Emily Ducati, who managed to snap her two-fight losing streak last time around as she went out there and outboxed the taller and lankier Ashley Yoder. Ducati is a very solid all-around fighter. She has a bit of a wrestling background, but mostly has really gotten comfortable with her striking style. She throws great leg kicks, throws great calf kicks, as we saw in the Jessica Penne fight, and she throws clean, crisp combinations. I know the line is a little bit wide here, but I expect her to use her wrestling defensively, keep this fight upright, and go out there and outbox and outstrike Vanessa Demopoulos on the feet, and I expect Emily Ducati to win this fight on the scorecards. Next up, we got Alatanga Haley coming in at plus 130, going up against Clayton Rodriguez, who comes in at minus 150. Now, Alatanga Haley is coming off is normally from a wrestling background, but has really gotten into his striking style. And unfortunately for him, he tried to utilize it against a superior striker last time around in Chris Gutierrez, who was able to chop his wheels away in the first two rounds. And even though Alatanga finally got to his wrestling in the third round, it was too little too late for him at that point in time. He showed some solid striking prior to the Chris Gutierrez fight, so I think he was just a little bit overconfident in his striking game that ultimately led to him losing that last fight. His opponent this weekend, Clayton Rodriguez, is a former flyweight who struggled to make the weight over his last two matchups or previous two fights to his last appearance, where he was forced to go up to 135 pounds in September, take on Fareed Bacharat, and he had some decent success with his striking early until he was eventually taken down by Bacharat, and Bacharat eventually smashed through his guard, got to the full mount, and eventually got that submission there. I think Clayton, will take a little bit of adjusting to get comfortable at 135 pounds. He's not super small for the division, but he still needs to adjust his weight so that he can be comfortable there and compete with these guys physically as well. He's a nasty striker. I expect him to have the striking advantage here. He's a BJJ black belt as well, which could help him on the mat against a guy like Alatanga Haley, who may not be as smooth with his jiu-jitsu as Fareed Bacharat was last time around, but if he leans on his wrestling, he could get some solid control time from that top position. However, I think we'll see Rodriguez utilize his superior striking, threaten enough off of his back, but mainly do his best work in the striking realm. And then from there, he should be able to box up Alatanga Haley and win this fight on the scorecards. It seems like there is some line movement, as there is some love coming in on the Mongolian fighter. So if you want to just sit back and wait for that Rodriguez line to continue to drop, you might be able to get a better line later on this week. Next up, Piera Rodriguez coming in at minus 195, going up against the returning Ariane Carnelosi, who comes in at plus 170. Now, starting off on the Piera Rodriguez side, I thought she was going to showcase a little bit better defensive grappling last time around against Jillian Robertson. That was not the case. Robertson pretty much had her way on the mat with her, and I believe she ended up getting that second round finish. Rodriguez has some decent striking. She has some good pop on her shots, but she's, like I said, she was previously showing improvements in her wrestling game, where she was able to get opponents to the ground and grind them out from that top position. Her opponent this week in Carnelosi is a tank of a human being who's been sitting on the sidelines for over 2 years now and looks to return and tries to bounce back from the loss that she suffered to Lupita Godinez the previous fight. That was a fight where she got taken down pretty much in every single round and got controlled for 13 and a half minutes out of the total 15 minutes that they ended up competing. She needs to improve her takedown defense, but also we can, point to the fact that Godinez does have a very solid wrestling game that she can lean on when she really wants to rely on that form to try to get her wins. In this matchup, Rodriguez will likely look to take advantage of the takedown defense issues that Carnelosi has, but I'm not overly comfortable in terms of laying the chalk on Rodriguez first and foremost, but trusting her to go out there and control Carnelosi on the mat. It's obvious Carnelosi is going to go out there and try to improve her get-ups, or at least improve her takedown defense enough, and I don't think that Rodriguez can be effective with the wrestling long enough to have prolonged periods of success controlling Carnelosi on the mat. On the striking realm, I think Carnelosi will be able to dictate the pace in terms of the power and explosiveness that she brings to the table here. I don't mind a small shot on Carnelosi as the underdog in this. Just the only things that give me some pause is if she really hasn't improved her defensive grappling, things could look pretty lopsided. And then secondly, the long ring rust and time away from the cage, a little bit of a concern as well. But I expect Carnelosi to go out there and batter Rodriguez en route to a decision victory. Next up, we got a battle here between Abus Magomedov, who comes in at minus 300, going up against the Brazilian Warley Alves, who comes in at plus 250. Now, we'll start off on the Magomedov side, who ended up losing his last fight. Now that's a two-fight losing streak that he's on. He was stopping the takedowns of Caio Bahio, but he was ultimately getting outstruck, especially in the second and third rounds. The third round, I believe, he got dropped and then controlled for the rest of the round. But he's very dangerous early. We know that, obviously, from his UFC debut, where he got a 19-second knockout over Dustin Stoltzfus. But we see that he does manage to slow down later on in matchups, which causes him to start to fall behind his opponents, especially if he's unable to get them him out of there early. Wally Alves kind of suffers from the same thing as well, but his veterancy and experience has allowed him to be a little bit more competitive in deeper waters. That was on display in his matchup against Nicholas Dalby in a fight where all three judges scored that third round for him, but unfortunately two other judges scored the first two rounds for Dalby and he ended up losing that fight on the scorecards. Alves is a nasty kicker, and that was fully on display when he chopped away at Munir Lazez, his body specifically, and eventually got him out of there halfway through that first round. This is going to be a battle from the jump, and Magomedov might have some more tools early in this matchup with the variety of strikes that he normally throws, but I don't think that Alves is a guy that we can quickly overlook, especially considering the loss that he took last time around to Ikram Aliaskarov. It's possible he could get chinned in the spot, but if he doesn't, this fight will play out way closer than the minus 300 on Magomedov indicates, which is why I think that Alves is definitely worth a shot at plus 250. I'm going to lean with Alves here, and I think that he'll provide enough resistance to Magomedov to cause Magomedov to slow down, and that could open up some finishing opportunities for Alves in the second or third round by knockout or even by submission, taking the inside the distances, or at least sprinkling a little bit of that on top of the money line that you're already getting on Alves, not a bad spot. Next up, we got Tamiris Vidal coming in at plus 250, going up against Melissa Gatto, who comes in at minus 300. Vidal, last time around, suffered her first professional, or sorry, not her first, sorry. She's lost a couple times in the past, but she lost her first UFC fight to Montserrat Rendon in a fight where she came in as a very big favorite. That was a matchup where she was getting outgrinded by Rendon, as Rendon did a great job in terms of putting her in the clinch, dragging her to the ground, and then just wearing on her. It was clear Vidal was starting to slow down because she was throwing everything into her strikes, and that's where a striking approach normally includes, is just reckless wide winging hooks looking to hurt her opponents or put them away. If she feels like she has a grappling edge over her opponents, she'll look to take them to the ground and grind them out from that top position, but that's going to be hard to do with where her skill set is, especially fighting better women now in the UFC. And now she's fighting the toughest opponent she's ever had to date, which is why I think the minus 300 on Melissa Gatto is more than worthy here, as I think that she should be closer to minus 400, maybe even minus 500. She'll provide a ton of resistance, and as long as she doesn't get chinned, which is possible with how reckless Vidal throws, I do expect Gatto to really put the pressure on Vidal in this spot, maybe use the clinch, eventually take her to the ground, and I think that will eventually open up his finishing opportunity for Melissa Gatto. So give me Gatto. I don't mind the chalk at all, and I'll definitely be sprinkling some of the inside the distance line here too, as I think that Vidal will leave plenty of openings for Gatto to eventually take her out. So give me Gatto and Gatto inside the distance. All right, next up we got Omar C going up against Tuco Tokos. Tuco jumping in on super short notice here, as Antonio Turcali, I believe his name was, ended up having to pull out on fight week. Tokos finally gets the call to the UFC after it seems like he's been, you know, touted on the regional scene, even though he went 0-2 in Bellator. He put together a little bit of a winning streak, got that shot on the road to UFC in 2022, ended up getting knocked out by Ming Yang Zhang, goes back to the regional scene, gets two layups in tomato cans, who he's able to beat, and then he ends up beating Myron Dennis in Fury FC earlier this year, although it came by an arm injury after he landed a takedown on the kickboxer there. I think Tokos is a guy that reminds me of Phil Hawes in the simple realm that he was a guy that's being shoved down our throats. Like, Phil Hawes was a guy that was given multiple opportunities through the Contender Series and the Ultimate Fighter, but still managed to find a way to make it to the UFC. And Tokos is a similar guy who, skill-wise, I don't think he's good as Phil Hawes. I didn't mean it by that at all. I just meant in terms of, you know, how much we heard about this guy before he eventually made it to the UFC and didn't make it to the UFC the conventional way of, you know, going through the Ultimate Fighter or the Contender Series. He's just taking the short notice opportunity. He's a BJJ black belt, doesn't really do well when he goes to strike, which is why he's been getting knocked out. I'm not overly impressed with his wrestling either. He does have a good staple of crew there over there at Killcliff FC. He's one of the closest friends to Brennan Allen, which is why you often see them in each other's corners. Again, I feel like he's going to be one of those guys that ends up quickly fizzling out in the UFC maybe gets two or three shots, considering he's taken this short notice spot, but still not a lot of confidence in him here. He's going up against a UFC debutante in the French fighter Umar C, who looks to have some solid chops. He's a BJJ blue belt, but often utilizes his wrestling approach here to take opponents to the ground and grind them out, and then eventually find submissions or just go the full 15 minutes. He seems to have a good enough gas tank to do it over the course of 15 minutes, which is very encouraging. But I feel like in this matchup, he might rely on his grappling defensively and look to put power punches on Tokos to eventually break him and potentially even knock him out. I think on the mat, it could get sticky for C, and there are no odds currently out for this matchup, so it's tough to see where we're going to get the line here. I could definitely see Umar being a chalky favorite in this spot, but if they put him around that minus 150, minus 185 range, I wouldn't mind taking a shot on him in this spot. Tokos is a guy that's come up short against guys that are of any substance or can provide any resistance, and I think that C will showcase that once again here. So give me C. I think he actually... he could either grind this out or eventually find that finish from that top position. But for the sake of this podcast, I'm going to take C and C by decision. Next up, we got Victor Martinez coming in at plus 385, going up against Tom Nolan, who comes in at minus 500. Now, Martinez has been out of action for a little while now, as he got knocked out by Jordan Leavitt in his UFC debut by a knee that completely stiffed Victor Martinez there. And that was a very surprising outcome, as I thought if Leavitt was going to win that fight, it would either come by submission or with a grapple-heavy approach. But it seemed like he had Martinez frustrated with a lot of the kicks and pressure that he was showcasing, as Martinez is a guy that normally likes to exchange in the pocket, utilizing crisp boxing combinations to touch up his opponents. He does not have a lot of power. He has some decent defensive takedown chops. Does a good job in terms of working back to his feet. Was taken down on the regional scene a good chunk, but continues to work back to his feet and then get back to his striking approach. Unfortunately for him, he's going up against a very tall and lanky Tom Nolan, who suffered his first professional defeat last time around against Nicholas Mota, who was able to exchange with him in the pocket and eventually found that big shot to put him away. Tom Nolan started off hot, landing some big body kicks and kicks to the leg, but Mota pretty much responded immediately by throwing his own kicks in return and then started throwing hands behind it, which eventually caught Nolan off guard and knocked him out there. I think that would be a great learning experience for Nolan, who seemed pretty much invincible leading up into that matchup, and that probably got to his head thinking that he couldn't get touched by other fighters. But Mota clearly reminded him that he can be human. So I expect Nolan to go out there and showcase a little bit of a more disciplined approach here against Martinez, and I expect him to take a kick-heavy approach as he was trying to do against Nicholas Mota. Chop away at the legs of Martinez, who usually likes to try to use his hands to try to get into range and try to knock his opponents out, and I think he's going to struggle to do that, having to overcome the 7-inch height and 3-inch reach disadvantage that he'd be at in this matchup. Look for the knees of Nolan to come up the middle and eventually catch Martinez as Martinez tries to throw a combination or even an overhand that might be a little bit too telegraphed. I'm going to go with Australian here, and minus 500, a little bit wide for somebody still so young in their career, but I'll be taking a look at the inside the distance odds, maybe even the knockout prop if it's at a good enough line, and taking a shot there. All right, next up, Luana Pinheiro coming in at plus 115, going up against Angela Hill, who comes in at minus 135. Now, Pinheiro lost her last matchup to Amanda Ribas in a fight where she started off pretty hot, utilizing her explosivity and speed early, landing some big shots on Ribas. But unfortunately for her, she started to slow down as she normally does, and Ribas started to pick up the pace and eventually got the finish in the third round. That's a matchup where I was very pissed off at myself, as the prior three fights for Pinheiro, I was trying to fade her gas tank and try to cash those round three tickets, but for some reason, I hopped off the fade train a little bit too early and ended up paying for it with Ribas. Pinheiro, like I said, she's very effective early, mainly reliant on early finishes in her matchups, but she has been able to outgrind opponents who are unable to stop her takedown advances, or at least unable to catch her while she stays very mobile late in matchups. Her fight this weekend against Angela Hill is going to be a very tough one for her, as Hill, even at 39 years old, has showcased that she can be very dangerous against up-and-comers who are looking to break into the rankings and into, somewhat of a title contention spot for themselves. Angela Hill has not changed her style. If anything, she's improved her takedown defense and her get-ups and her submission defense so that she can stay where she is most comfortable, and that's with the strikes and throwing combinations. She utilizes a great amount of footwork, darting in and out, pivoting off of angles, and utilizing that to her advantage by touching up her opponents and throwing out a ton of volume, which most opponents are unable to keep up with. Her through her last four matchups, she's 3-1, and she's derailed fighters like Lupita Godinez, Emily Ducati, and Denise Gomez, all as underdogs, and showcased that she's very tough to deal with when she gets into her groove and when she gets into her flow state. In this matchup, it could be close early, and I wouldn't even be surprised if we see Pinheiro look to go to her grappling early, but I think from the improvements that we've been seeing from Hill in her defensive grappling, she should be able to keep this fight upright, and then from there, utilize her volume and cardio advantage to really piece up Pinheiro going into the late rounds. It's hard to trust Hill to go out there and get a finish of any sort, especially considering that she is now coming into this matchup. If she goes to a decision once again, that will be 12 straight fights, win or lose, that she's seen the scorecards. And I think that ends up coming to fruition once again here. But I do think it's the veteran Angela Hill as the slight favorite who ends up getting her hand raised by decision. Next up, we got Adrian Yanez coming in at minus 325, going up against Vinicius Salvador, who comes in at plus 275. Now, Yanez, finds himself on a two-fight losing streak, getting finished in both of those matchups to Rob Font, which halted that five-fight winning streak he had to start his UFC career, and then got followed up with that leg kick KO or TKO from Jonathan Martinez. Yanez is a guy that does a great job in terms of utilizing his hands and his kicks in combinations, utilizing his footwork to get in and out of range, but he's learned some very harsh lessons over his last two fights. I don't think that this will derail him for eventually cracking that top 10 of the division, as I think he has the skill set and eagerness to learn and get better, which will benefit him moving forward. Again, hands, very tough or underrated power as well, and very good accuracy in terms of when he throws his strikes and making sure that he lands often on his opponents. His opponent this week in Vinicius Salvador is a very poor man's version of Anderson Silva, a name you continuously hear on the Brazilian broadcast whenever they're talking about him when you saw Salvador fight on the regional scene. But unfortunately for him, it starts to get to his head a little bit too much, and he ends up showboating, allowing his opponents to go out there and chip away at him and end up beating him by decision, which is why he's currently now 0-2 in the UFC. We saw Victor Altamirano utilize solid wrestling and good striking defense, staying away from the majority of shots that Salvador was landing when they were in the striking realm. And then last time around, he had a very good start against CJ Vergara, but then he started to get a little bit too in his head in the second and third rounds, allowing Vergara to get ahead on the output and the strikes, and that ultimately allowed Vergara to go out there and win that fight on the scorecards. This is a matchup where I think that Yanez's superior technical striking will come in advantage, especially when Salvador tries to showboat or throw a lot of flashy strikes. Yanez will be able to counter him perfectly here and throw a lot of good damage, which will likely end up seeing him get his hand raised on the scorecards. Could he knock out Salvador? It's possible. But given the unorthodox nature of Salvador's striking approach, I think it'll be difficult for Yanez to land cleanly enough to find that button and put him away. And by all accounts, it looks like Salvador has a pretty good chin as well. So look for Yanez to go out there, ease himself back into getting into the win column, chipping away at Salvador and winning this fight on the scorecards. All right, next we got Temba Grimbo coming in at minus 135, going up against Ramiz Brahimi. Intriguing fight here between two guys that normally like to utilize a pressure striking or pressure grappling style to get their opponents out of there. Starting off with Temba Grimbo, he got rid of Pete Rodriguez pretty quickly in his last matchup as he landed an overhand that eventually set up that finish for him to get the ground and pound finish. Grimbo normally throws recklessly on the feet, wide winging hooks, looking to either knock his opponents down, knock them out, or utilize that to eventually change levels and get his opponents to the mat. He has a decent grind, but it seems like he makes some mistakes, as we saw in the AJ Fletcher fight, which ultimately got him choked out in that fight. Grimbo is a guy that came into the UFC at 32, 33 years old, and I think he came in as pretty much a finished product, although he's been spending the last half of his career over there at MMA Masters and could be making some improvements. I don't think we see those improvements inside the cage that makes me believe that he can go out there and be a top 15 fighter in this division. Now, Brahimi has been out of the cage for, I believe, for close to 2 years now, and I believe that was largely due to a spinal injury that he was dealing with and trying to get back into shape so that he can go out there and actually compete. And it seems by all accounts that he is ready once again to go out there and do that. This is a guy that started his career 6-0, and then after that, he's exchanged wins and losses, going 3-2 over his next five fights. He's a guy that goes out there and puts it all on the line immediately. All of his fights that reach round three are fights that he ends up losing, largely due to a bit of a cardio dump that he normally has, as he usually goes very hard in the early going to try to find the finish, getting his opponents to the ground, looking for submission opportunities, either to choke them out or eventually find that TKO finish. And I think that's going to be very tough for Greenbo to deal with. I think Brahe Maia is the slicker BJJ specialist here, and I think he can set up his takedowns a little bit better, which will eventually open up a finishing opportunity for him. I don't like backing guys that normally have a bit of a cardio issue, but seeing all the holes that we see in Garimbo's game, I think Brahe Maia is definitely worth a little bit of a shot in this spot. Fight doesn't go to decision is probably my favorite spot in this matchup, as I think both guys are capable of getting the finish, but I think it's ultimately going to be Brahe Maia who gets that submission opportunity, maybe gets the back of Garimbo, locks in that rear naked choke, and gets him out of there early. I'm thinking round one submission for the returning Ramiz Brahe Maia. All right, next up, we got Chaos Williams coming in at minus 120 going up against Carlston Harris, who comes in at plus 105. Now, it's been over a year since we've seen Chaos Williams in action, and last time we saw him, he ended up picking up a split decision victory over Rolando Bedoya in a matchup where he came in as a big favorite, but Bedoya showcased that he deserved to be in the UFC as he landed some decent shots of his own and made it harder for Chaos Williams, more so than he was expecting. Chaos landed some big shots on Bedoya. Bedoya showcasing that he had some great durability and a nasty chin, which allowed Chaos to land more strikes on him, but not able to get him out of there. Chaos came into the UFC as a reckless striker who was normally going out there and headhunting his opponents looking to put them away, but the experience that he has accrued has taught him that he needs to harness that power a little bit better over the course of 15 minutes if he wants to be successful at this stage. And I think he's done that. I don't know if he'll be a guy that ever finds himself in a title fight, but he'll definitely be a guy that's going to be a tough out for a lot of his opponents. His takedown defense has largely improved. He's a guy that just bites down on his mouthpiece, throws hard combinations, and tries to knock his opponents out, but is learning to manage his gas tank to go into round three if that's what he needs to do. Carlston Harris managed to snatch a victory from the jaws of defeat last time around as he got controlled by Jeremiah Wells for the first two rounds, and then as Wells slows down, just as he always does, Carlston Harris was able to latch onto a choke that put Jeremiah Wells out cold. Harris is a nasty choke specialist and a guy that uses gangly strength to really push opponents up against the cage, utilize the body lock, taking them to the ground where he ends up trying to utilize his strength and his BJJ advantage to try to get them out of there. This is going to be a tough fight for him to try to deal with the physicality of Chaos Williams and try to get this fight to the ground, which will cause him to go out there and use his reckless striking. And I think that would be a bad idea for him to go up against a crisper striker like Williams, as Williams should be able to find some big shots and hurt Harris as well. There is an opportunity for Williams to find a knockout in this spot, but I think that we'll see a lot of clinching from Harris. I think we'll see him try to slow this fight down, but I think the majority of damage that we'll see, at least the effective damage, will come from the Chaos Williams side, which is why I don't mind him around that minus 120 line in this fight. So give me Williams and Williams by decision. And that brings us to our main event. Edson Barboza coming in at plus 120, going up against the first time main eventer, Lerone Murphy, who comes in at minus 140. Now, last time around, Edson Barboza had a very rough first round where Yusuf emptied the gas tank after he hurt Barboza, thinking that he can get him out of there. Unfortunately for him, he emptied his gas tank too much, and Barboza was able to bounce back in the second through fifth rounds, where he was able to really put together a solid body of work, hurting Yusuf himself a few times there and winning that fight on the scorecards. He's 38, I believe, now at this stage of his career. 38 years old. You got to believe that his durability is going to start to catch up to him here, especially continuously cutting down to 145 pounds. Now, he's never missed weight, but as we know, it gets harder for the body to cut weight as we get up there in age. And Barboza is a veteran of the game. I don't expect him to miss weight, but that durability is going to have to be sacrificed a little bit, especially when he goes up against other power punchers. Him at his best showcases decent takedown defense early, but he's a guy that can get taken down and slowly start breaking if opponents utilize a relentless grappling approach, as we've seen in the past. And then obviously the shining part of his game is his Muay Thai, is his nasty elbows, his knees, his combination striking, and then not to mention the plethora of experience that he has over, you know, the 10 plus years that he's been with the promotion. He's fought pretty much everybody at 145 and 155 pounds. His opponent this weekend, Lerone Murphy, 13-0-1, five of those wins coming inside the UFC, has been unable to stay very busy in the UFC. I believe he made his promotional debut back in late 2019, and here we are 5 years later where he's coming into his seventh UFC matchup. He's a guy that would normally utilize a lot of powerful striking and explosive striking, likes to utilize a lot of kicks, but in recent fights we've been seeing him lean on the grappling with his clinch, with his takedown, and great control from that top position. He showcased solid cardio as well over the course of 15 minutes, specifically in his last matchup against Joshua Koulibaly, who he pretty much controlled for that entire fight, sweeping him on the scorecards here. Now, this is a guy that has a tremendous amount of potential still, in my opinion, especially with his ability to mix up his game as he has been doing in recent fights. And I think that if he can continue to manage his gas tank well as he has and game planning effectively against different styles, this is a guy that can, you know, start marching towards that top 10, top 8 of the division and start making some noise. Now, in this matchup specifically with Edson Barboza, striking will be somewhat even. Maybe you can give a slight edge to the Barboza side, but I think that Murphy will be able to mix this fight up enough to cause Barboza some issues. That could be with, you know, landing some big strikes of his own, staying consistent with his kicks, but most importantly, getting that clinch and that grappling game going. It's going to be tough to trust him to do that over the course of 25 minutes, as this will be his first 25-minute fight at the UFC level. And again, against a guy in Edson Barboza who, you know, he builds upon his confidence if he's able to, you know, get into his groove, get into his flow state, you know, shuck off takedowns well enough that it causes his opponents to slow down. That could be a big concerning thing here for the Lerone Murphy side, who's still trying to build experience against legitimate competition. But I do think that Murphy has the chops to go out there and make this a very long and difficult night for Edson Barboza. So I'm going to lean on the Murphy side. I think that we see him grind out Barboza here. I think he makes it, you know, slows it down, puts Barboza into uncomfortable positions, keeps him there, lands some big elbows. I'm going to lean with the up-and-comer here in Lerone Murphy to end up getting his hand raised by decision. All right, there's a wrap on the breakdowns there. How long was that? Roughly about half an hour for you guys. Normally, you know, we go about an hour, just over an hour or so. So I tried to tighten this up a little bit just to take advantage of the time that I currently have. I think I only have an hour now until I have to get to the airport. So I'm going to bundle this up for you guys real quick, drop it for you guys. And remember, there won't be any other content up until at least Saturday. I am very much hoping that I can get out the Bellator breakdowns for you guys. Even if it's a quick picks version where I just drop who my predictions are, I'll do that for you guys because I know you guys very much appreciate that. And then on Saturday, I'll drop my free parlay as well as the three best prop bets as well. Appreciate the understanding. Appreciate the love. Appreciate the support. Drop a like. Drop a subscribe. Drop a comment. And I'll see you guys on hopefully Thursday. Otherwise, I'll see you guys on Saturday. Good luck on all your action this week, folks. See you then. Peace.
Last thing.